It's welcome to the Tux Radar podcast. This is series 5, episode 16, and I'm still here.
I'm still here.
And I'm still here.
And I'm still here.
And so I think I'm going to be here for a really long time.
So we've all survived the latest round of redundancies at Future Publishing. Congratulations.
Well done, everyone.
We feel ecstatic. In this episode, we have news, good news, and also bad news. We have our discoveries, we have the halfway reminder, we have... Do we have a Speak Your Brain?
Kind of.
You have a Speak Your Sentience.
Somebody sent me an email that I'm going to use as a Speak Your Brain, but it's only short.
Speak Your Ganglion. Yeah. Speak Your Central Nervous System. Mumble Your Brain. Yes, we also have... a challenge report, notable by its poverty. We have an open ballot, and we're not going to bother with any Creative Commons music, are we?
No.
All right.
But it's quite funny that you always mention it.
I know. it's in the podcast notes.
It is.
So we should. Okay, that's the intro and the people done, and in this episode, which brings us to subscription news. You can subscribe to Linux Format at tinyurl.com/lxfoffer1, and it's a good deal, apparently. We're also now on Google Play and Zinio and all those other things. You can't get us at you can't get a digital subscription for $13.99 anymore. A report from Business Intelligence, who sit near us, realised that that's actually us selling it at a loss. We were losing money. And so thanks for your good work, Business Intelligence. It only took 3 months, 4 months for you to get that out.
Well, yeah.
Can you, not much more can be said, really.
Can you also clarify some of the cases with people having the free trial and then having to pay the new price?
Oh, that was appalling.
It is appalling, and I really feel sorry for it. Had nothing to
nothing
do with
to
us.
Do with us. That's
none
I mean.
Of this has anything to do with us.
But that was a Google fail, wasn't it? Rather than a.
Are we actually sure that's what happened? That's just what I think happened.
Wasn't the whole pricing thing. Wasn't a Google fail.
I mean, the free trial thing was
So,
let's clarify what we're talking about.
Okay, so. For a couple of months, Linux Format was £13.99 for a whole year's subscription on Google Play. That was a future strategy. That was future experimenting with pricing. What then happened is, I mean, we were reluctant to talk about it because we thought that it was quite a crazy price. And what then happened was that Future decided this was a bad idea and put the price up. So people, we think, because we haven't done it, if you get a free trial, I think it's a month or 2 weeks. If you sign up for the free trial, and then the price goes up before the free trial ends, and you have to pay for the rest of the subscription, you no longer get the £13.99 price. So there are a load of people who, brilliantly, signed up to subscribe to Linux Format through Google Play while there's a free trial, and while it's £3.99, they come back to pay for their subscription and it's gone up 10,000%. And they're annoyed, quite rightly.
Yeah.
And I think that's it.
Is that a Google fail or a future fail?
No, it's a future fail. It's a future fail because, firstly, the pricing in the beginning, and then dealing with the consequences of jumping the price back up in a responsible way.
Yeah, if this has happened to you, write into us and we'll go and print out the email and slap management with it.
Yes, we will, actually.
Yeah. That's not a really good idea.
Yeah.
So, sorry.
If we can get a really good thick wad, we might even be able to give someone a black eye.
we'll print it out in very large type.
Yes.
So they can read it as it's coming towards them.
Yes.
Suddenly aware that if the pile of papers actually matches the weight of an old yellow pages book kind of thing. Cause otherwise, the slap is not very strong.
Nah.
Mm. You have to have a proper one.
In spite of all this, the current issue of Linux Format is actually really good.
That's because they have nothing to do with it.
good work, team. Well, it's because there's so much cool stuff to write about, isn't there?
It is brilliant. The world of Linux and free software, it feels just great.
Mm. The the cover feature, the build your own distro feature, I remember we did that ages ago and it just looked hard. It looked inaccessible.
Yeah.
But there are, who did it? Was it Neil?
It was Mayank, I think.
Mayank. He found three different ways for different levels of ability, different degrees of customization. You can create your own distro. It doesn't matter whether you've only just picked Linux up or whether you've been at it for years. There's a way that's best for you to build your own Linux distribution and take on the Shuttleworths of this world at their own game. It's just, it feels great. It feels brilliant. It's the sort of stuff that I'll almost never do, but it feels good that you can.
I've used, obviously when I was creating the DVD, I used it quite a few times, but SUSE Studio, certainly, just it's point and click.
It's lovely, isn't it? We had a challenge once to create distros in SUSE Studio. That was a nice challenge, because it was so point and click, and we can do it in like 20 minutes just before the podcast started. Yeah, I mean, in other bad news, we haven't been able to get the PDF subscription working, the digital-only subscription working through My Favourite Magazines, you know, 2.5 years on. Just requires a small database change. Hopefully that'll happen soon.
Hopefully.
So sorry.
Fingers crossed. That was, hang on, I was trying to drag us into the realm of positivity.
Yeah, no, Linux Format is still a great magazine.
Linux Format is a great magazine, and Linux is great.
And Linux, there was a time about 3 years ago, I think, when things were looking a little bit bleak. I think it was when Linux had failed to capitalise on
Vista.
Yeah, on Vista. Yeah. And we didn't have much news to talk about. And I don't know, I wasn't feeling negative, but I feel the opposite of that now. I feel, you know, the avenues of the new avenues that we can talk about and have do things in the way that open source has been accepted so widely, and I guess what we're going to talk about in news, the whole renewed emphasis on security and encryption, and you know, Linux free software is the only way.
And I think there's still more territory to explore. I think when you talk about the geographical domain of the desktop and so on and so on, well, Windows and Mac in particular, the Linux community keeps expanding. I put a couple of questions on my Facebook profile to my friends and family about Mexico, if they knew anything about Linux, if they had any sort of information on what Linux was, and it was actually quite remarkable what they answered. But still, you can see that there's still gaps and cracks here and there in Latin America to be sort of covered by the open source community and Linux community. I think there's still so much land to cover, which is great.
Yeah, and it feels, I mean, the way I've been looking in recently is a mobile, and it just feels that there's just this whole swell of momentum behind mobile Linux. It's just about this massive wave building. It's just about to break and slosh oceans of free software all over our mobile devices.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
What's the bootloader that you've got on your tablet?
Impinging on my discoveries.
Yes. Okay. Back up. It's the longest welcome section in podcast history.
Willkommen im Das Podcast.
Now it's time for news.
After all that positivity, the news, the hard reality of truth, is that all our encryption's screwed. We're all NSA, GCHQ, they're reading all our private thoughts. They know what lolcats are making me laugh. Shocking. Now, new revelations from the vast swathe of documents Edward Snowden smuggled out of America show the NSA has been breaking. It's a little bit vague exactly what's going on, but they can certainly read a lot of encrypted traffic that we thought they couldn't read. Some of it is through back doors. They've snuck into commercial code, which again underscores the importance of open source software. If you're running, you know, miscellaneous binary software, you've no idea who's chucked what in where. Well, actually, on that, there was a story. I'm getting on wild on a tangent here, but there was a story a few years ago about the NSA approaching I forget which BSD it was, FreeBSD maybe, one of their developers, and trying to pay someone to put a back door in.
SSH, they'd always had that kind of pressure, didn't they?
Possibly.
And I think some of the core BSD developers do SSH.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, this is just more revelations on the fact that this is going on in commercial software, and you know, if you can't,
and people can't even talk about it. That's what's so hideous. I mean, I think we've kind of been pretty restrained in our coverage of all of this, you know, kept an open mind. But this is becoming horrendously ugly, and this, I'm becoming a little bit desensitized to the scale of it.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's shocking, frankly. I mean,
this is.
I mean, you can really see the difference between the free software and the closed source on this, because in the closed source world, you get a binary bit of data, you can use it, you can trust it, or you cannot. In the Linux, I'm skipping forward a couple of pieces of news here, but you know, there's been some discussion about the random number generator in Linux. We can actually discuss that. Yes. We can talk about it. We say, yes, we're using this implementation from here, you know, whether or not it would use the rd-rand generator from the Intel chips. We can look at the data that it's getting, and we can say, yes, it's actually using it in a response way, or no, it's not.
Yeah.
In this case, Linux was fine. It was... we'll go into that in a minute.
But the most important thing for me is that these big companies, Yahoo and Microsoft and Google, they've not been able to talk about what they've been asked to do.
Yeah.
That can't happen with free software.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you've got the skills to look at this, or you know, or the community, they can ask and force what they want through into the software, but they can't hide it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it gets even worse than that. It was in the case, in some cases, they can not only stop you talking about it, they can force you into doing something and force you to keep running your business as usual.
Yes, like we talked last time all the time before,
which is what Larvbit could have been forced into doing, which is why he had to shut the company. And
it's out of control.
It really is.
You know, everyone uses the George Orwell analogy, but he couldn't have imagined something like this.
Yeah.
The scale of this actually, the scale of this getting through every aspect, it seems, of government policy.
Yeah.
You know, it just runs through it like a cancer.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Not that of my employer.
I'd really like to see, obviously he's dead, so it won't happen, but I'd really like to see a Graham Greene novel set set in these times.
if we find ourselves with any spare time in the coming months, maybe we should write something like that.
You know, guess the weight of the USB stick at the church fair. You're exactly right, Mr. Morrison. What does this mean?
So yeah, if you're as annoyed with all this as we are, one of the best ways to, well, one of a great way of trying to speak out and stop it is by buying the Humble Bundle 9. You can play awesome games and support the EFF, who are doing great work in and at least challenging the legality of everything that's going on. Next item of news.
It's a fantastic bundle. I mean, it looks like a really good bundle. I probably will buy it, although I've not played any of the games in the last bundle that I bought.
Yeah. I only played one.
Yeah, I still have Multiwinia and Darwinia undownloaded, unplayed.
Mark of the Ninja looks gorgeous. Yeah. I had a moment of nostalgia for Revenge of Shinobi last week, and this just brought it all flooding back.
Oh, you should come over to my place and play Shinobi in an arcade machine. With a trackball.
Just after we finish the podcast, then.
Yeah.
Okay, the next item of news. FreeBSD is dropping GCC, at least in the base system, in favour of LLVM. Have I got that acronym right? I think so.
This is a compiler thing, isn't it?
It's a compiler thing. It's a compiler and C library thing. And it's been going on a while because the BSD guys have never moved over to the GPL version 3.
Of course.
Version of the GCC. So they've been stuck on an old version that they've been doing a lot of work on, but hasn't been supported as the main tree. And they finally... It hasn't been dropped completely. You can still bring it in and compile specific ports if you want to. But it's not part of the base system. And this is... But it is, in general, I think, quite a groundswell against the GPL version 3 in a lot of areas. I mean, it was a thing with the various versions of Grub used in some. And... I don't know. I'm starting to wonder if this this is a turning point against the newer GPL. And I'm not really sure whether that's what that means.
No. I think probably what we're seeing, it's difficult to see without seeing how the GPL version 3 is applied and how it affects development. So it's great to come up with these ideas in principle when the spec was written and everybody had these great ideas and people wanted to restrict certain uses. But how that actually affects the developer motivation and how they want to actually create things and write things. And so FreeBSD GPL v2 is a feature, you know, and it's a feature that they want as part of their OS, of course.
Yeah.
And I think Linus has the same problem with it for the Linux kernel. You know, it's actually restrictive. It's good in the general thrust of what it's trying to do, but it's restrictive in what motivates developers to work on it. And maybe that's what we see there. Maybe that's all it is.
Yeah, I think the GPL version 2 really captured the spirit of open source software and what people felt was intrinsically right about it. And GPL version 3 has added some stuff that a lot of people don't understand it. I'm sure the FreeBSD and Linux do understand it, but I think a lot of sort of in the more general world don't understand the exact nitty-gritty of things like the anti-TiVoization.
And it was a bit snarky like that, wasn't it? I don't want to criticise GPL v3 because I think it's actually a good step forward in terms of attacking things like the TiVoization and also acknowledging, you know, so many web apps running on open source software without releasing their source code.
Yeah.
I thought that was the whole point of GPL 3.
Well, no, because you can go to the AGPL version 2 if you want to stick with the version 2 and, stop the web app loophole, which is what a lot of people have done. In fact, I don't think GPL version 3 in itself does stop the web app loophole. I think you have to go to AGPL version 3 for that.
This loophole, then, is that when you distribute software via the GPL, you have to also distribute the source code.
Yes.
And that keeps everything open and nice and stops NSA backdoors and Theresa May controlling your Bluetooth toilet.
Yeah.
Actually, that might be quite nice.
But what if there's a reshuffle and it's William Hague controlling it? Then?
Oh, no. Never watched that.
I have to change the picture in my bathroom.
But the web apps, if stuff's running on a central server, which you're connecting to through your browser, the source code, you're not actually running that software yourself, are you?
Yeah.
So you don't get the right to see that source code.
Exactly. It never triggers the distribution clause.
Right. So that's the loophole that we're talking about now.
Yeah. And there's, the what they call the AGPL, which stands for something really obscure, the Afro GPL, I think.
Yes.
And it's a clause in there which says, which changes the distribution. It means whenever you allow people to access it, you have to give them access to the source code as well.
Right. Because the original GPL was written like before the internet. No, it was obviously not before the internet, but before widespread adoption.
I'm trying to remember. Was it 90? Was the early 90s?
I think it was. Yes, it was. It might have been before the web.
I was trying to work that out. Yeah.
It may. I can't remember now. It might have been 96. That rings a bell. So it might be just post web.
Post web. My favourite musical genre.
Just to finish, I suppose, on the FreeBSD thing, it's good that there's a distinction, a greater distinction between BSD and Linux, because sometimes it's difficult to see the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, more choice for people. But at the same time, it undermines the thrust of free software.
Yeah, and I think the version 2, version 3 really does come down to the difference between open source and free software.
Yeah,
But... Yes. Well, we'll see how it plays out. I can't imagine many Linux distributions dropping GCC anytime soon. But maybe I'm wrong. And finally, Intel and Ubuntu have a spat over the MER code, or more specifically, who will... it was about upstream changes. We always complain about Ubuntu not passing their changes upstream. Now they do, and Intel slap them back to them and tell them if they want to fragment the market, they can... sort out their own source tree.
Awesome.
I didn't read the story in any detail. So the Ubuntu devs are trying to move MIR back up. Into what?
No, it was the Intel drivers.
Oh, right, okay.
Ubuntu pushed code back upstream to support...
To handle Mir.
Mir. I think it was actually Xmir over Mir. Yeah, and Intel said, no, we're not maintaining...
We don't care to improve the performance of Intel hardware just on Mir.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually... It goes a bit deeper than that, because Intel actually employ quite a few of the Wayland developers. This is, they're a significant portion of the Wayland thrust. Yeah. It's not an Intel project, but they are... You know, they're one of the teams driving it. And they, well, it was a bit weird. In the sort of rejection, it said that it was a management decision. So it does sound a little bit like...
Politics.
Yeah.
Rather than, no, we don't agree with this code. It's not great code and it's not going to derive any benefit. Mm.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's just pushing the division between Mir and Wayland further.
I don't know how I feel about that. I mean... When you look at drivers and the kind of bloat that they have for a load of features that nobody uses, I don't see why not when it's going to help a lot of Intel users on Mir.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's short of actually a technical reason for it not being implemented.
Yeah. I mean, whatever you feel about Mir, the chances are a lot of people are going to end up using it purely because it's Ubuntu. I mean, it's a popular distro. It's going to be pushed out to a lot of people.
And also, I don't suppose Canonical Ubuntu are particularly going to care. You know, they'll ship their own Intel drivers with Ubuntu, and it just...
It's true. It's more work for them, obviously. They have to maintain another source tree, but...
And they can actually hold up their hands and say, we tried.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it is their change. They should be responsible for hosting the source tree. But...
Yeah, but then you look at the number of patches in the Linux kernel for, you know, niche MS virtualization or NVIDIA stuff or, you know, Android stuff.
Well, that's the news.
That's the news. Great news, that's Ben.
It's now time for Discovery of the Week, which has been a fortnight, which is for the first time in a couple of months it's been a fortnight. Where does anyone want to go first?
Can I go first?
Of course you can, Andrew.
I've had two great discoveries.
I love it when someone says that.
I'm absolutely brimming with excitement and love for the future. My first there's a Linux discovery and a non-Linux discovery, both of which, well, I don't know, I think they're great. Discovery number one, Linux Manjaro. I tried to install Arch. It was just too much of a pain. You shouldn't need to read instructions to get something done. You should be able to work it out as you go along. Manjaro, you can work it out as you go along because it's got a nice graphical installer. You can download an ISO. It's the partition 2 is gparted, which is will be familiar to anyone who's used gparted. Sorry, the desktop is XFCE. It feels fast. It feels really crisp. It looks nice. I've only just put it on there, so I've not benefited from the rolling release stuff, which is the whole point of Manjaro. It's like an easier version of Arch, so you get the benefits of Arch without the headaches and the hassle. And I've got it set up to dual boot with Ubuntu. I'm getting rid of Linux Mint. I know. It's just, what am I doing? So I'm going back to Ubuntu and also going forward to Manjaro. I've got one foot in the future and one in the past.
Yeah.
Just to see what it's like.
Albinoni versus Star Wars.
And you know, Ubuntu. It works so well. It's brilliant. It's really, really good. I don't like all the advertising crapware. just get that out there. But it's Unity just works, and it's so easy to use.
My biggest annoyance with Ubuntu is those pointless little pop-ups that keep saying something's gone wrong.
Yeah.
Just all the time, something's gone wrong. Okay.
Yeah. Cancel. With no indication of what to do about it.
Yeah. Should I panic? You know, is it about to jump out and throttle me? Or is it?
Is there anything I can do?
Yeah.
No, it's too late.
Would you like a cup of tea?
So discovery number one, Manjaro, is marvellous. Discovery number two is the non-Linux discovery. On my street as I walk home, I'm not looking on purpose, but I can more or less glimpse into someone's bedroom.
We know where this is going.
On the second floor.
And I assume that it's a young girl's bedroom because there's a just it's eye level, right? Because there's a One Direction poster there. Every time I walk past, there's, you know, there's Zayn and Harry Styles and
you know the names.
Niall Horan, Louis Tomlinson, and the other one, Liam Payne. Boom.
Wow.
Bonus points. They're all looking at me. They catch my eye and wink at me in a non-threatening, burgeoning sexuality kind of way. And I walk past them and go in and make a cup of tea. But recently, this poster has been taken down and replaced with a David Bowie poster. the Aladdin Sane one, where he's got the really skinny and he's got the bit of mercury on the collarbone and the red hair. And the kids are all right. Brilliant. This is great.
Does that mean One Direction have covered some David Bowie?
It means that the kids are all right. It means that everything is good in the world.
Yeah, unless she's moved out.
I suppose. One Direction could be like a gateway drug to Blondie.
Or Cabaret Voltaire. Yeah.
Those are my discoveries.
How you beat that?
I don't know how you beat that, because I'm still trying to shake that imagery out of my head.
Shall I go next?
Please, I just wonder if that bedroom didn't belong to a gang. What about if it was a, I don't know, 30-year-old bloke?
He was living with his mum. It doesn't matter.
All right, so redeem himself by moving on.
It's the progress from One Direction to Bowie. represents a great leap forward for mankind.
One way or another.
I've also got two discoveries, one Linux and one non-Linux. I'll start with the non-Linux one. I've discovered that the deputy editor of Linux Format is stalking teenage girls. You just hold on a second while I move to the other side of the room.
You're not a teenage girl, Benny.
Yeah. My Linux-related discovery.
I was going to say, he's got red hair and it's pointing up. Yeah. Like that David Bowie's poster. Yes,
that's right. I'm just like David Bowie in that respect.
A while ago, I started trying to move pretty much everything away from the few corporate services that I use onto free software services. And then it actually started with a story about a security researcher who got completely locked out of their Google account, lost all their Google Drive access because Google decided they were a bad person because they happened to be storing some security-related stuff in Google Drive, which Google didn't like. So at that point, I realized, well, actually, you know, I generally used free software before, obviously, but I still use stuff like Google Drive, Dropbox, had Google Android on my phone. So I've been gradually moving it away. I moved to OwnCloud a month ago, or probably 2 months now. Been doing a lot of stuff on that. This fortnight, I've discovered CyanogenMod, which is free software, well, an open source version of Android. Built on the Android open source stream, by default doesn't include any of the Google stuff, the Google Play, the Google spyware, the Google this is what you're doing, report it to headquarters.
Ben wasn't so cynical when you started.
So and as you mentioned, I've got it dual booting. I haven't completely switched over yet, but got it using, what's it called? I've completely forgot the name of it now. Multi-ROM. And that allows me to dual boot both Android when I need it. You know, sometimes I want to check out Google Play Magazine, see what's going on there in the industry and such like. But I can also switch to CyanogenMod. And using F-Droid as my app store, so I've got all the free software versions of everything. It's brilliant. I've got offline maps. Now Google have got rid of those. Not on my free software phone, they haven't. And what, another thing I discovered, actually, is Ampatchy, which is brilliant. I've got a load of music stored on my own cloud. And this just allows me to stream it to my various devices, a lot like Spotify and Ubuntu Music and all that sort of stuff. Except, obviously, I own the music. It's not just...
Yeah, stolen. Yeah.
Liberated.
I can now stream my music wherever I want with Ampatchy and OwnCloud.
I think that you have to write the tutorial on how to install... what's it called?
Cyanogen Project.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a little bit specific to device, I think.
Yeah. But the general, I don't know, installation should be fairly similar in all devices.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredibly simple.
It does look super cool.
When
you boot it up and you get a boot menu on your tablet.
Yes. I do actually have loads on there at the moment for reasons you'll discover in the next month or so. I've got Bodhi Linux booting into Enlightenment on there.
Oh, yes.
Which
Enlightenment.
Yeah. I've got, Ubuntu. I've got Tizen.
Don't spoil it.
I won't spoil it. Mm. I'll leave it there then. I've got nothing. It's all lies.
Do you want to go have a go?
If you want to. I got to graphic design discoveries related to Linux. One is called Xarac Stream.
Oh yeah,
which is a vector graphics application, which is the open source of a commercial. I remember it was a commercial.
It's a big story that they were opening the source code up. It's still an alpha, isn't it? They're still kind of developing.
Yeah, but I was trying it on, and it's just brilliant. It's really, really quick. It's just vector graphics, just like Inkscape kind of thing, but it's more aimed for web graphics than anything else, desktop publishing or anything like that. But it's really fast, it's really quick, and you can do most of the features that you're supposed to do in Illustrator or whatever in an easier way. The interface is easier and simpler to understand. So I'm just surprised that they're still selling the commercial version, and it costs something like, I don't know, $200, something like that. But they opened the code for this thing to be free, and you can download the free cross-platform application, which makes me wonder, why would you ever want to buy the commercial version unless it has more features on it? But yeah, that's one. Try on, it's really good. I guess it's cross-platform, so you can install it anywhere except Windows, I think. I had to check because the commercial version is a Windows application.
Yeah.
And the other one, talking about, again, graphic design, and we mentioned about font management on Linux. I find a really good application called Font Matrix, and basically it's just a font manager for Linux. It's not just for Linux; it's cross platform as well. But you don't have to buy again a font manager anymore, because this does exactly the same as what Adobe Font Manager did, creates families and so on, but also gives you all the features like PDF. It prints PDFs from all your fonts on your machine, so you have a huge catalog of what you call your machine, and you can sort of reorganize them as you please. But yeah, I just didn't realize if you put a little bit of effort and time, you can make your Linux box a proper desktop publishing computer. With obviously with the other applications, so Scriter and Scrivers, no need for spending any more money. That's in case that I get sacked from Future Publishing. I know at least I can save money on equipment and software.
That is one.
And I'm keeping my mind open about these things. And the last one, just for fun. Rosie, my daughter, wanted me to find a way to teach her how to do animation on a computer, and I don't really know how to do animation. I did a little bit of Flash before, but I find an Android application. I'm not sure which is just Android or that's compatible with iPhone as well. It's called Drawing Cartoons, and it's just for those filmmaking animation producers that don't have, they want to be working in the industry but they don't have the money and the skill to do it. It's just like a prefab animation application, and all it is basically is just it's a canvas with lots of different tools already there, and pre-render or pre-drawn stickmen cartoonists, and then you can photograph someone and put the face of that particular person into this thing. And it's time frame based, but rather than doing frame by frame, you can do you can create animations by skipping 10 frames, for instance, in a second, and
setting up another keyframe.
Exactly, and the application calculates what movement the character, for instance, or the cartoon has to do, just like in the Matrix, like what they did in the Matrix, that they fill the gaps in the spiral photograph system, that the computer calculated what the rest of the camera angles and movements were. Pretty much the same thing, the same idea. But it's cool, it's fantastic. I did struggle at the beginning trying to get the grips out of it, but Rosie basically just understood every single feature of it really quickly, and she's only 9 years old. And
she's more intelligent than the average girl, obviously.
But she's more intelligent than me. Did you say that?
Mission accomplished. Then.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
I can leave the house now.
I can leave the house. You're going to be even more successful.
Am I successful?
Your clone will be.
That's the ultimate upgrade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Anyway, yeah.
Just
drawing cartoons.
It's one thing. I quite like it through creating animations and stuff. Is Scratch.
Yeah.
It's got a bank of images there, and you can move them around really simply. It's all click and drag and drop and what's it. And then you can do it by movement. So move from here to here over this time, turn around, etc., etc. Put little speech bubbles in. And it actually works really well for that. If you want, you can put in little interactive things, click here to see this or whatever. But just for creating animations, you don't need to. It's a great as a desktop watch set.
Well, you did a tutorial on that, didn't you?
Not specifically on animations, but
Boom, there you go.
Brilliant. Thanks. I've got a couple, and they're very similar to Ben's. The first one is actually a way of storing maps offline from Google Maps on the Android and iOS. On the Android and iOS Google Maps app, if you type, so you zoom in onto the area you want to save for offline, which is really useful for those of us who can't afford big data contracts or go somewhere you don't want to have to pay data for, like France. Type into the search bar OK space maps, and it saves all the map. It caches it all down.
Wow.
I tried it this morning and it worked. It works because a little icon comes up saying preloading maps, and it fills up, and the maps are available offline.
Cool. So how do you specify the area? Is it just what's on the screen?
I haven't taken it offline and given it a proper test. Yeah. But yes, I think it did quite a lot of downloading. So maybe if it's zoomed out quite a lot from the area, it maybe grabs quite a lot of detail in there. But I don't know. I've not properly tested it. The other discovery was thanks to A Sheepy on Twitter, who tweeted at my Twitter account at Degville yesterday to tell me about the Raspberry Pi distribution that's just been released. The Raspberry Pi folks did a blog post on it yesterday or the day before. And Raspberry Pi is an audio file distribution for the Raspberry Pi. But unlike a normal distribution where they just put a load of their packages together, a lot of thought has gone into it. Specifically, there's a fantastic web interface that has been created for accessing your media content, your music files, and being able to play them from the Raspberry Pi. So I guess the idea is you plug your Raspberry Pi into an amp and a Wi-Fi thing or into the Ethernet port, and then you remote control the music playback from your phone or from your laptop. It comes with a load of support for USB digital audio converters so that you don't rely on the Raspberry Pi's one, which is awful. It'd be nice, I haven't tested it, but I wonder if it supports audio over HDMI, because then there are many amps that have HDMI inputs these days. I haven't tried it, but it looks like the perfect replacement for my squeeze box, which I've had for like 7 years, and which is now no longer supported by Logitech. But I need a music media server. It'd be nice if it supports Spotify. But then I've been looking, there's another thing called Mobidi, which is a streaming music server that does support Spotify. Maybe I'm thinking of going to Google Play Music anyway, because it's slightly cheaper.
Ampatchy.
Does Ampatchy do Spotify?
No.
I've got an unsupported Spotify plugin. There's actually, and the API is kind of decoded, so there are lots of possibilities. But those are the two things, the OK Maps thing and the Raspberry Pi. They're my discoveries.
I actually was on the Raspberry Pi website the other day, and the guy's got this massive blog post about making your own power supply for the Raspberry Pi. Something that always gets me about audio stuff. Apparently, the quality of the power in apparently has a massive effect on the quality of the audio. And he sort of goes through, the first one he does, he actually hand makes his own power supply and does a blog post about how you can get. Then the second one is some board that he's got. It's £90 he spends on this power supply. And I'm sure there's a good reason for it. But
I'm not a massive audiophile, but I don't understand it if you're using the Raspberry Pi for digital output, which is what I would do. You're not going to use the digital audio converter on the Raspberry Pi because it's terrible, and so you're going to use something else. So what does the power supply matter? But who knows? I don't know enough about these things. No. That's it. There are discoveries.
That brings us hurtling to the halfway reminder. Still to come, we have a Speak Your Brain. We have the results of our challenge report. Challenge. And we have the open balance.
So we didn't get a Speak Your Brain, but we did get an email that's related to the challenge, and I don't think we set ourselves a challenge last time, so this could almost be both. This is an email from Paul Walsh. He says, how about this for a challenge? Starting with the next podcast, one of you comes up with a challenge for the others to do over the next fortnight. You then take it in turns from podcast to challenge the others. Who goes first? Use your magic wheel of fortune to decide. Spun by someone who's not a member of the LXF team. Of course, we were always pretty impartial about that. I think this is a really good idea.
That's a good challenge, yeah.
Yeah. We could do it today. I did bring the wheel in. You see, I've propped it up against the against the wall. I haven't thought of anything, so...
Who should we get to spin the wheel?
We'll just have to make it up this time and...
We could all spin it at the same time.
Yeah.
Hand on there.
Okay. I'm going to grab that bottom left corner.
Okay, should we spin it? See, so this is to spin it to see who it lands on, and then that person's got to come up with a challenge for everyone else.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
All right, so, okay, let's spin it. Go! Oh, who's that landing on? Who's that landing on? I don't know.
Looks like Effie. Looks like Effie.
It's Effie!
Hey. Effie!
So, Effie.
This is a fix. This was planned.
You've got to challenge us to do something for the next episode.
Oh, right. Okay, well, probably... It's got to do with... languages. I don't know. Graphic design. You're not.
We could learn to say something in Spanish.
Yeah, but with a little bit of practice, it won't be too difficult.
How bad we are.
No,
hang on.
Yeah, it could be a conversation or just a short conversation. Like one of the things that I struggled when I went to France was trying to go to the supermarket and asking for assistance in French. I did struggle. So something like
this
that,
is, this
putting
is
in a, someone in a
Can
situation.
Can you give me some assistance?
Some assistance, s'il vous plaît. Yeah, or something like that. Putting you in some sort of situation that you can have a conversation to get out of that situation, something like that. Or I don't know.
Is there a Mexican Linux distribution?
I don't know, but there's a Venezuelan one. Does that count?
Awesome. This way it was in Mexico, isn't it? Or is it the way around?
It's a different place.
We've got beyond this.
Please, don't leave it.
It's all South America. It's all the same.
I don't know. I'm going to have to think about it. Something like learning every single president in Mexico.
Learning every single
The name of every single president.
How many have there been?
I don't know.
Chavez.
Body paper they're on.
Porfirio Diaz. That's a
Vito.
Oh, every single prime minister, every single prime minister, every single king.
It's not massively Linuxy. I mean,
oh, it's gonna come on, what? Then you need to specify. It's gonna be a challenge.
It's a Linux podcast. I'm just making an assumption.
Okay. Then I don't know. Hang on, no, we got to think about this. We got to think about this. On the spot, I can't really think of one single Linux challenge apart of using desktop publishing and image manipulation software to do something specific, like, I don't know, a spread of the magazine. Oh. But that's boring.
It's too big a job.
Yeah,
it is. How about a poster for something cool?
Yeah.
In using only free software stuff.
All right. But we did something similar.
A poster for OddCamp. Because OddCamp's like...
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
That's it.
Like coming up. We could do a poster for OddCamp.
There you go.
Cool.
Simple.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Using only open source.
Only free software.
Free software, yeah. Is that all right?
Yeah. Okay.
There you go.
Thanks, Effie. Thanks, Paul, for sending in your suggestion. We'll... As you can see, we didn't prepare it or talk about it before.
Maybe it will work better next time.
Yeah.
Now it's time for the open ballot. We often introduce new people to Linux, and there's always that niggling question, what distro to start someone on? Not so long ago, the answer seemed obvious, Ubuntu. However, that's falling from grace at the moment. Ben says.
Andrew's looking at Ben.
What do I say?
Oh, Ben says. There you go.
Actually, I like Unity. Effie, Graham, and Andrew disagree. Although apparently Andrew doesn't anymore.
It's okay.
Traitor.
What? I've been using it a lot on the XPS 13 that I'm writing about.
When the facts change, I change my mind. What do you do?
Nothing.
That wasn't me. That was Kate. Our question this fortnight is, what's the best distro for beginners? I made a tally. The two most popular responses were Ubuntu and Mint, with about 10 each. The second most popular response was not Ubuntu. It's amazing. It's amazing how this negativity just creeps in everywhere.
Do we add that to everybody else's score then? Do we add the not Ubuntu scores to everyone but Ubuntu? And so Mint wins.
Possibly. Oh dear, I don't know. So, yeah, so let's... I'm going to start with the not Ubuntu, just so we can get it out of the way, because we've spoken about Unity already and how Ben likes it, but nobody else does, apart from me and Graham. So JBS4115 says, when I first tried Linux, I tried Unity, Ubuntu, because it was said to be user-friendly. Worst description ever. It wouldn't recognise half of my hardware, and there was no way to get answers. Forum help, yeah, right. Instead, I found someone on a Windows forum who suggested a distro, and he said he would help. It was Kinotix. Ravet CoFX. God, what's my weird, like, William and David and Andrew and like King, biblical names or king's names, I suppose so, yeah. Anyways, sorry. I have tried Ubuntu in various forms. It is not for beginners, mostly because every 10 minutes or so it spews out errors. Yes. But Mint or Elementary, on the other hand, are great for beginners. Unanimous Penguin says, why are people saying Unity? I really don't know which orifice Canonical pulled their usability testing statistics from, but it must have been a very deep, dark one. Excellent. Blah, blah, blah. Therefore, I can quite confidently say that Linux Mint Cinnamon is the most user-friendly distro. In fact, I think I'm paraphrasing Graham when I say Mint is just Ubuntu 4 years ago, which is quite honestly the highest praise I could give to a distro right now. Barack Obama, not verified, says, I usually recommend... Oh, not so long ago, the wrong answer seemed obvious, Ubuntu. Now the wrong answer is obvious, Ubuntu. I usually recommend OpenSUSE. And Burgess Meredith says, Unity, Intuitive, are you freaking high? Recommending Ubuntu is like suggesting BDSM to the couple next door, just because you're into it. Sure, it might be great for you. Imagine this in the Burgess Meredith voice as well.
It's awful because the people that live next door to me are like 80.
So they probably sound like Burgess Meredith.
I just know.
Blah, blah, blah. Yes, it might be great for you, but you've got to realise it's not for most people. I tried LXDE, I tried Ubuntu, but then I discovered KDE and thought, yeah, baby, that's what daddy likes. Blah, blah, blah.
What is this podcast turning into?
Sorry, it's all gone downhill. I still love to use KDE, but I've since moved on to Mint Cinnamon as my permanent desktop because I wanted to move as much of my computing away from Windows as I could. And Mint, although not cool, is dead reliable. It is the Labrador Retriever of distros, and the one I recommend to 75% of new users. But there is no one-size-fits-all. Depends on the user, use, and hardware. And no, I'm not into BDSM.
He says that.
They're just anti-Ubuntu invective.
Yeah.
From... You know, if you don't like it, fine. Just, you know, suggest something else.
Mm. We might be partly responsible for that because we've been pretty antagonistic about Unity and Ubuntu in the past.
Oh, no, it's got nothing to do with me.
Well, we have, but I Am Zimbo pops up at the end to say, all the criticism of Ubuntu I have ever heard has been from people who have already been using Linux for a while, either older versions of Ubuntu or different distros. I started out with Unity and loved it. So has everyone I have since introduced to Linux. Mint is great, with Cinnamon topping the other environments in terms of newbie friendliness, but I still prefer Ubuntu. That's a good point. I did prefer the old GNOME to Ubuntu, but if you've never used Linux before, then I mean that's the market that Canonical were chasing,
yes,
with Unity, isn't it?
I think it's the market they're still after. They're not after Linux geeks.
No.
They're after people who just want they don't even know it's an alternative.
They're not after
just want a computer.
The handful of Linux geeks. They're after the tens of millions of people who
just want a computer to do their thing. Yeah. And it is getting, it does do that.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I'm suggesting that a new Linux user should start with Ubuntu and Unity. I think it's a mistake. Unity looks really good when I saw it on Ben's tablet. It looks appropriate.
It
looks like where it's supposed to
phone.
Be on a laptop or on a desktop.
Yeah.
It just looks confusing. And when you compare it to Mint, if you're switching from a Windows machine to Mint, a Mint Mate, for instance, it's just logical. Whatever you see on the desktop is logical. You know where things are. When you look at Unity, that launch bar is just confusing as hell. Sorry, I don't really want to say that I'm negative about Ubuntu because I agree with you regarding Ubuntu pre-Unity when it was just the GNOME desktop environment. It was just perfect. It didn't need anything else, in my opinion. Okay, evolution and all that and the operating system is a thing that is needed, but not to that extreme. It's not appropriate for beginners. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
I think it is a good choice for beginners, but I don't necessarily think that it's a good choice for beginners to Linux, because it's a good choice as an alternative operating system, but it keeps what's great about Linux away from the user, which isn't a bad thing, but it's a good introduction to what Linux is and the kind of ideas behind Linux, especially the way Canonical's going, like branching out on its own with Mir and all the other things that it's doing. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing anymore. I you know, it's good to have the option. But as a beginner to Linux, I don't know. I mean, we've talked about KDE before, and KDE isn't good for beginners, but it's got all the features and it looks great, and it just actually needs someone to give it a really good makeover to make it easy for beginners.
I see it time and time again. Every single time that I convert someone into Linux and I show them what Ubuntu is on a live DVD, they just get completely confused. They don't know where they are. They just don't know. And they're switching from another platform into Linux, and then you show them Mint, and it's just a logical switch from one operating system to the other.
I think there's a definite sort of distinction between sort of beginners. There's people who, a computer is just something they use occasionally to check their mail. They've only ever used Windows, and they don't really understand anything else, and they don't want to understand anything else. And I think for those sorts of people, the sort of classic applications menu on the bottom left, little windowless, what's it, just works. They know it. It's not necessarily the best option, but it's the one they know, the one they understand, the one they feel comfortable with. And for people like that, I think trying to put something off Unity just looks strange, which straight away is going to put them on the back foot. It's just, they're not going to get any benefit out of it. They prefer something comfortable. But for someone who's actually interested in computers, they've probably used Macs and Windows, and as a, you know, they're interested in learning different ways, trying out different things, then Unity might not be such a bad thing. The fact that it stands out there is actually good. It gives them a reason to use it. Like, this is actually different.
It is good. I do actually really like it. You know, I gave it a great review when I used it, and I'm using it on the XPS 13, and it's an incredibly functional desktop environment, and the integration with Canonical's and Ubuntu services and applications and packages is brilliant.
Yeah, and I think the software center, or whatever they call it now, I think it is still the software center, is really good. I think that's a lot better than the competition.
Yes,
has.
Yeah.
But I don't disagree with that, Ben. I understand what you're saying. What I mean is that if you're a person that's interested in computers, you're not gonna choose Ubuntu because of Unity. You're gonna choose Ubuntu because of its functionality.
Because of its support for Steam.
Exactly. It's a different proposition there. I'm just talking about people who just can't deal with Windows anymore because their operating system is going slow, and with all the virus checking software, basically lost all performance on the machines. They're switching to Linux because of that reason.
Yeah, and I think that sort of people would fall into the first category, that just want something that works like they think a computer should work.
Exactly.
And for those people, there's no point in rocking the boat. They know what they can use. Let them have something that's like
I'm not saying Ubuntu's is rubbish or anything like that. Quite the opposite. I think it's a really good operating system, or at least Unity as a desktop environment. It's brilliant. It looks lovely and everything. It's just that I think it's a little bit too imposing for anyone that is just starting on Linux, visually speaking. And the functionalities are just a bit confusing. Like, the features are a bit confusing.
Yes, there are. I mean, I've more or less roughly ordered these comments, but they do make a decent, stimulating read in their entirety. So I advise you go to the comments section of the last open ballot and have a read them all for yourself to get the unexpurgated versions. I've headed this next one. There is no beginner's distro, only Zool. Penguin, not verified, says, I do not believe there is currently a distro that is friendly to beginners. I used to recommend Ubuntu with GNOME, but since the advent of Unity, GNOME doesn't run very well on Ubuntu. The latest versions of GNOME are just disastrous, of course. Ubuntu is now a tablet-only interface. A good project for someone might be to develop a user-friendly Linux distro for desktops. You think?
Well,
surely that's Mint.
Well, yeah. That's just more duplication. There already are. I mean, obviously, there is no one distro to rule them all, but that's because people are different. So that there's a short list of maybe four or five that we could recommend. You know, pick one. There's no need to create yet more user-friendly desktops. There are loads. What you were saying, Graham, about not learning Linux, and not about Ubuntu hiding a lot of what's awesome about Linux. Archibald says, recommends for Linux newbies, Gen 2, Arch, and Linux from scratch.
we're all sort of pulling a face here. Gentoo Linux or Arch Linux, he says, best for beginners, some problem, use your brains, not have a problem, good, but your beard is 50 centimetres now. Mighty Cheese says, Linux from scratch, get an intimate understanding of what makes the OS tick by compiling a compiler and tools to compile another compiler and tools, then a kernel, etc. How to learn the OS inside out. Apart from that, mint KDE. I see your point, but I disagree. Yes, Dizzy Lizzy makes an extreme pragmatic point. The best beginner's distro is whatever you're most familiar with. For a true beginner, learning how to use Linux is really only going to happen if they have a personal IT minion babying them every step of the way, there to answer all of their questions. Most computer users don't want to find the answers themselves. They want it told to them. Call me cynical, but that's how it's been with everyone in my family I've ever introduced to Linux.
There you go.
Fair point. I'd be able to help someone out with Mint or Ubuntu, but I wouldn't have a clue with, I don't know, Fedora.
Yeah, no. Exactly. I empathise with that.
Support. Point of view. Yeah, total absolutely. Cost of ownership. Anonymous Penguin says, if you have a close friend to show the first steps, including the community, and to fix the initial mistakes that beginners would probably fall into. Oh, that's not a real sentence. Do you think that new users need something that looks like Windows? You mentioned before having a start menu.
I think some new users do. I don't think it's universal.
So they only need a couple of references just to make themselves feel familiarized with the environment, and then after that they discover where the other
and I don't think the
features are.
I don't think it has to look exactly like Windows. I don't think there's any point in theming it to look like this. But like I say, the general setup, the taskbar at the bottom with the window list and the applications menu on the bottom left, just helps people because they're familiar with it.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I mean, it works well.
We've got three on that subject here from Steve Ellis, Dunstey and Spangwidges. Steve Ellis says, Mint gets my votes. Over the years, I've tried many distros, including Red Hat, IBM's internal Red Hat client, Ubuntu, Debian, etc. Then I found Mint about a year ago and was instantly impressed by its close resemblance to Windows XP. Dunstey says, for total newcomers to computers in general, and not only to Linux, I'd definitely recommend Ubuntu GNOME. Ubuntu because of the great range of packages, which we've discussed, it's great, and GNOME for the general ease of use. However, most former Windows users might already have had a hard time switching to a new OS, so a completely unfamiliar desktop is probably one more unfamiliar thing to throw them off. In this case, I'd rather recommend Mint Cinnamon, as it at least loosely resembles the traditional Windows desktop. What I would definitely not recommend is any KDE-based distro. While the looks might resemble Windows, it just has way too much customization options to be recommended to new users.
The risk with KDE is always if you sort of bash the keyboard and slip on the mouse, then suddenly everything... your windows are upside down, your taskbar's at 30 degrees.
That bouncy board is so cool, though.
Yeah.
You guys...
So strong arguments in favour of making things slightly Windows based or Windows looky, but Spangwidges disagrees.
Oh no!
It's a bold contradictory move. He says, "I think we need to get over this idea that in order to attract new users, a desktop needs to look and work like Windows. OS X didn't go from nothing to 10% market share by looking familiar. It got there by offering something new, something better." The same can be said of iOS and Android growth. Neither was harking back to tired old desktop metaphors during their meteoric rises. New users want something attractive and makes sense. Unity seems determined to do things that don't make sense. Mint is an ugly...
But then Unity's actually trying to do what Android and iOS does, you know, integrate that whole full screen, you know, zero window manager thing.
It works, kind of. Mint is an ugly... poorly designed mess. I agree with the above poster, who I didn't include, sorry. The only one offering a rational, clean user interface currently is Elementary OS. Now, Elementary OS got 5 votes.
Yeah, when Ben and I saw that yesterday, We went to the elementary OS website, and it looks, I've never tried it, but it's a beautifully presented site, very Apple-like, and they've got a fantastic video.
Yeah, you know, I got it up and running yesterday. I have used it before, but only briefly. And it does have a very Apple-like feel. I didn't use it for long enough to really get a feel for it, but something's...
You don't like OS X.
I don't like OS X, and there were little things in it. Like there's no, as far as I could tell, there's no minimise button on the windows. You had to right click and then select minimise from a menu, which I think that sort of thing could really confuse new users. But it was really well presented. They obviously put a lot of time into making it feel like a whole, rather than just a collection of stuff that's been thrown together.
Yeah.
Final comment comes from Sultan of Swing. He says, experience leads to overthinking. Mm. I've recently had the same dilemma, one for a colleague whose Vista installation managed to corrupt itself, and another for my aunt with an old XP laptop slowly grinding to a halt. I must have installed about 5 distros in VirtualBox in preparation for my neighbour thinking of all the likely problems he might need solving that just worked on his Vista machine, including playing Blu-ray discs. In the end, I lent him Ubuntu to try, and when I went round the next evening with Mint and Mageia in hand, discovered that he'd already installed Ubuntu without any problem and was already setting up a media server using something he'd found in the software centre. He didn't know any different, he just accepted Ubuntu for what it was, and by all accounts found it easy enough to use without the need to ask.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. I think we, I don't know.
The last couple of times I've introduced people to Linux, I've sort of gone around with a few Linux format DVDs, and I thought, I'll show them all the different desktops, and yeah, it'll be great. No one cares. Whatever, stick that on. Fine. Just want it to work. Can I check my emails? Yes, fine.
Can I sync my iTunes with my iPhone? No.
So yeah, actually, the last, so it's all come down to it. I've just used Mint Mate, which no one actually recommended, over Cinnamon because it works better on older hardware, which is usually what I'm putting it on.
I think I would recommend Mint Mate as well.
Yeah. Again, like you said, I'm far more familiar with the Debian commands than the Red Hat ones, but that's just because that's what I've used. I always get confused whenever I use Yum. It's almost identical to apt-get.
Doing the most basic things as well. I just don't get it.
It's just
even though it's the same.
Yeah, it's just a lack of familiarity. But
honourable mention also to Mageia. A few people said that, and it does. I mean, possibly because it is KDE, but it's also not like KDE. We've often said that KDE needs someone to take it by the scruff of the neck and make it good. And I think Mageia and Rosa are the projects doing that.
I think Rosa's done a really good job of it, but it's just getting no attention from anyone else. But I think it's really good.
We need to commission some sort of feature about Rosa. And we need to get Ellie Wilson to illustrate it. And can we please have either, because it's Russian... So all the cliches come out. Can we either have a penguin with Gorbachev style birthmark on its head, or a penguin sort of like Ivan Drago from Rocky IV with the penguin with the face of Tux? That would be so cool. Yeah.
Is that why we don't sound in Russia? Because of all the cliches.
But imagine that. Imagine being Valentin, our Russian licensee, opening the PDFs up, thinking, oh, good Lord, what have they done? what have they sent me? Priceless. So that's all the weather, and that's the... Any closing comments?
Great response to the question, and... I think by the number of responses, it's an important question, and there isn't a definitive answer.
The definitive answer is whatever you find it easiest to support them with.
And maybe we're over analysing the question. Yeah.
I think Sultan Swing's point there is absolutely bob on.
So that's it. It's another epic podcast. It's like 1 hour something on the timer.
Like an Icelandic saga.
Yeah. But yeah, I've quite enjoyed it.
Very good.
It's easy to enjoy the podcast when there's so much cool stuff happening.
Yeah, yeah.
It is really nice. It feels great to be talking about projects that are actually really, really good. And not
and so much choice as well. There wasn't a big winner in the open ballot. It was quite. There was quite a distribution.
Yeah.
So that's it. Thank you for listening. Thanks everyone here. And we'll join you again in 2 weeks' time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.